ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Jack Chen, CEO and head of community at Loudhailer, a digital communications startup that focuses on providing connectivity solutions and alternate ways for people to communicate. In addition to building and directing the Loudhailer team, Jack helps natural communities like schools, citizens, or businesses understand how they can use Loudhailer's connectivity tools to establish authenticity in relationships, increase engagement, and influence behavior in the digital world. Jack, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Gabriella, for having me.
It's a new year, and it's always a good time to take stock about what's been going on and also to think about the future and where things are going. And what do you see as the major technology trends today, and how is your company, Loudhailer, addressing those things?
Sure. You know, it's what an incredible year 2017 has been. And I think there are a number of topics or trends in the industry in the tech side that I think are really going to be major dominant themes in a way that will touch everyday lives, right? So I think the first most obvious one is net neutrality. And I don't think people have really wrapped their heads around the potential impact of the end of net neutrality and what that means. And not just to people who are, you know, trying to access their social networks, but to advertisers, right? You know, how will carriers start charging differently for digital advertising? And how does that all mean? You know, we think about the availability to access information. It's going to be a very different landscape, I think, assuming that it does go into plan. Of course, you know, there are a lot of threatened legal challenges and so forth, but I think that'll be a big topic for 2018. Another one is cryptocurrencies. And there's certainly a big, you know, CryptoKitty, one of the very popular, I'm not even sure if I would call it a game, but certainly a technology that uses the Ethereum blockchain, shows that with the right user interface, you can have fairly wide adoption of cryptocurrency technology, and that people are willing to pay real dollars for it. Mm. So I think as advertisers, brands, marketers start wrapping their heads around this is to say, how is this going to impact us, you know, in the new year? What does it mean when Bitcoin or Ether get mass adoption and people start wanting to pay for things in that? And how do you get the right conversion rate? You know, there's still quite a bit of a wide spread between, you know, if you want to buy a Bitcoin, the cost of that differs depending on where you go. And then I think, of course, you know, that sort of digital advertising in general is going through a little bit of a challenge because you're looking at a lot of digital fraud. I mean, towards the end of 2017, I heard someone say that, you know, there's as much fraud in digital advertising as there was in subprime mortgages.
And oh my.
I don't know if that's true, but certainly, you know, advertisers who are, you know, paying for ads, they have to say, is it a bot that's visiting that site or are they really getting real eyeballs?
Well, right. And also brand safety. Yeah. So, you know,
exactly.
I know that people have been working to address that, but that has always been one of the things that linear networks always tout is, you know, you can measure it and you know what you're getting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that's kind of funny, right? Because if you're talking about broadcast television, you're expecting the networks to enforce brand safety. But when you're looking at, you know, a large social network, the real world is a messy place. And the more that these digital social networks become as big as the real world, it gets messier. Mm. And you can hire thousands of people, tens of thousands of people. You can hire AI, you know, deploy AI, but brand safety is never going to go away. And in fact, as the content producers become more prolific, it's just going to exacerbate the problem.
And when you think about the disintermediated blockchain that you were talking about earlier, the minute you take out the disintermediation, I mean, part of what makes linear TV safe, brand safe, is that it's a mass media medium. And everything in the new world order is not mass media. It's my media. And so it's really turning the whole thing on its head.
Right. And then, and I would say sort of the last sort of major trend, which is the topic closest dearest to me, is the smart city.
Right.
And, you know, it's a term that's been picking up in popularity. And what's funny is that it's a very ambiguous term and in some ways redundant, because depending on how you define the term smart city, you could really say every city is smart, right? Because presumably every city government has access to the internet, you know? And so what does that really mean? As technology providers, content producers, everyone is thinking about, you know, what is their role in a smart city? And that's really the topic that we're looking to tackle.
Right. Now, going back a bit around, you know, you had a sort of epiphany moment. I know we've talked about this in the past that caused you to have the idea for Loudhailer. Can you take us to that? And then we can talk about how Loudhailer integrates in this whole smart city idea.
Sure. And, you know, it was really my co-founder, Simon. He was watching a Japanese tsunami video. And in it, there was a lady who was on the rooftop of her house, or a house that was floating away. She had her dog in one hand and her phone in the other, her smartphone. And then there were rescuers who were buzzing nearby. But of course, they couldn't actually talk to each other because the cell networks were down. And that's when we started asking ourselves, well, why is it that no matter how close you hold two smart devices to each other, if you don't have a carrier present, you can't communicate?
Mm.
And it seems sort of I think it's one of those things that we just accept for granted, right? If you're sitting in the subway and you're in between stations, you want to send the person next to you, oh, look at this funny image or whatever, you can't send that link and you just sort of wait until you're coming back into connection, because that's just what you do. And we're really trying to challenge the fundamental principle of that. And so we think about, and so Loudhailer is looking at, you know, creating new ways in which people can build digital networks and communicate. And what we're looking at is providing what I'll call horizontal connectivity. So let me explain what I mean by that. In today's model, it doesn't matter, you know, if we were sitting in a conference room, if I wanted to send a message to you, the message goes from my phone to my carrier, to my server, to your carrier, to you.
Mm.
Right? So it's a vertical kind of path. And what we're saying is, if we were close enough to each other, can I just connect directly to you and just send you that message? And the power of that means that even if our servers were down, even if we don't have carrier signals, we can still communicate.
Right. How close do you need to be in your technology?
Yes. So there's a condition, which is that the two devices have to have our software or, you know, somebody's app that has our technology embedded in it. But we can create a connection at up to 250 feet apart. And that's a sphere. Okay. So it's both vertical and horizontal space. And that's over 20 stories tall.
Oh, wow.
So it's and then we can let people daisy chain off of each other, or for the tech enthusiasts, we can create a mesh network. And so by that, I mean, you know, if I'm trying to send somebody who's halfway around the stadium, I may be more than 250 feet apart from them. But if there are enough people between us, I can still message them back and forth. We still protect the messages with encryption. So there may be people between us who are helping to relay the message, but they can't read it unless they're a member of the group.
Does it drain? Like if I'm standing between, I mean, one of the things when you're in a current situation, in a Wi-Fi situation, networks get overloaded. If you're in a popular spot in your smart city and you're a part of the daisy chain, does your phone get overloaded? Is there any limit to what your phone can pass through?
Right. So great question. We use, so because we wanted to be a software-based solution, you know, I think it was important for us that we not require the end user carry another piece of equipment.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, you have your phone. The last thing you want is to have to carry yet something else in order to have a communication device. And so we were limited to looking at the protocols that are available on a smartphone. And then, of course, we're not a carrier, so we weren't going to use the cell chip. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to use Wi-Fi because Wi-Fi is really, you know, up to about 80 to 100 feet. And also, Wi-Fi limits you to one connection. Mm. So we quickly settled on Bluetooth. And in fact, you know, Bluetooth is more ubiquitous than Wi-Fi. There were 2.5 billion Bluetooth devices manufactured in 2016 versus 2 billion for Wi-Fi.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and then now this is getting a little technical, but there are in fact a couple of different versions of Bluetooth that are supported by your Bluetooth and Bluetooth chip in your phone. And we use Bluetooth Low Energy, which is, as the name implies, it actually, you know, uses the least amount of power on your phone. And so if you turned off your Wi-Fi and you turned off your cell and all you did was just run Bluetooth, it would still last a while. Then part of the reason why we settled on BLE, not just for the power consumption, but also for the distance. And so that's how we get to that 250 feet.
Okay.
And but the drawback is we can only transmit small bits of data packets. So it's not like a Bluetooth headphone, you know, where you can stream high quality audio or video. Mm. It's instead what we're trying to get at is less is more, right? What are the real nuggets of information that you want to convey in a communication? We're trying to get to that heart. And what I, you know, and the really my approach is, you know, being able to stream 4K video, I don't really know if that's a huge improvement in my life. But being able to create my own connectivity wherever I go, that is important to me.
Well, and I suppose also compression is always improving. And so that problem may get solved for you potentially by somebody else.
Yes.
One of the things though that two things I'm curious about. One is I've heard about beacon technology like at Disney with the wristbands. And how is this technology different from beacon technology? And then also as a secondary point, so is it just phones with the software or is there some sort of something special that has to exist for your where you roll it out and a city has to have a certain number of devices in order to sort of telephone pole it out, for example, a starting point?
Sure. Yes. And I guess it's to say, you know, human beings, and I'll answer your second question first.
Okay.
You know, you can't rely on human beings to always be evenly distributed at 250 feet apart, right?
Frustrating
in order to,
people.
In
yes.
order to have a good network. And so what we looked at was, well, we need the ability to scale this mesh network, this mesh technology, in order for it to serve a larger space. And so let's say like a cruise ship, right? You have a defined physical space, but with lots of people and where saturated connectivity may not be available. Mm-hmm. And so we do have a hardware component to this. Mm-hmm. So it's not pure software, but the hardware component we impose on the facility owner.
Okay.
So meaning whoever controls the space in which they are trying to create a wider area type of mesh network, then they can use our proprietary hardware invention that we call a Bookie box. And so you can position them throughout location, you know, throughout a facility, and then you can use it to help relay messages so that you can make sure that everyone gets the message that you want them to get. Now, so what becomes interesting then is each one of our Bookie boxes becomes an engagement point. So not only can they broadcast hyperlocal content, the 250 feet, but they can also measure engagement, meaning who's standing near it. And what's also, what's fascinating, and when we started going down this Bluetooth path, it was, there were a lot of benefits that, that suddenly became available. So for example, we can take roll call. So let's say that you're a university and in the middle of a lockdown, you need to know where people are. Well, if we, if the university had our Bookie boxes installed throughout the campus, we could actually take roll call. We could tell you, tell the university where people are.
How does that work in terms of privacy, you know, and people get very sort of authoritarian regime-y about stuff. Can you be anonymized or are you definitely a known person?
Right. So I think it depends on who we're installing it for and what the context is. I think so you know, to the extent that we're working with sponsors, any information we pass along has to satisfy, you know, all privacy laws and information needs to be anonymized. But if we were doing a white label solution for a university, there are, you know, public safety rules and then a deeper level of consent that students can provide. And also it's opt-in, right? So if you don't want to be part of this network, don't download the app.
Right. If you've downloaded the app just once, like let's say I'm on a cruise ship and I've downloaded the app and then I travel to a university that has also has your Bookie boxes, am I instantly able or do I have to re-download an app that's university specific rather than cruise ship specific?
So it depends on the university, like how they would want to configure it. But I can give you a real life use case. So we had, you know, during the Women's March, a number of our friends were going to DC and they were warned in advance that they would have trouble getting any kind of connectivity because the cell networks would be overwhelmed. And so our friends actually, you know, downloaded a beta version of our app, had it on their phones, and when they go to DC, they were able to message each other.
Oh, that's so cool.
And that's the kind of idea that we're thinking about. Now, you know, as we talk about sort of scaling this technology to a larger area, we have a solution that we call a connected city. And Providence is our first connected city pilot. And what we've done is we've positioned Bookie boxes throughout key locations in downtown Providence. And so the idea is that as people walk around, they can connect directly to the institutions and businesses and restaurants around them. And by that, I'm talking about horizontal connectivity. And, you know, for this to be scalable to a citywide level, we needed the Bookie box to do so. We announced that we're in discussions with Columbus, Ohio and Sacramento, California. And what we would like to do is have one single app. And you can download, you know, whether it's the Providence or Columbus version, whatever it may be, but that as you go from city to city, wherever there's a Loudhailer Connected Cities platform, you'll be able to connect directly into that city's network. So you don't have to download an app every time you go to a different city.
That's great. And so just I'm thinking about if I'm out in a city with my family, that means that I can make a reservation at a restaurant. I can find out where things are on sale. I can find out what movies are playing and what art exhibits are showing as I walk around the city and take more advantage of them. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So it would be up to each participating business and institution as to what information they want to make available. But, you know, I think let's say that you were a traveler from overseas and you didn't pay for roaming. But, you know, what's funny, right, is you need location-based services. You're most likely to need location-based services when you have the least access to connectivity, because when you're overseas, you're very unlikely to pay for data because that's exorbitant.
Right.
And then, but that's when you need location-based services. And so the kind of the world that we want to reach is, let's say you're traveling in Paris, you're standing in front of a restaurant, you kind of want to go in, but you want to look at the menu, make sure they have what you like, you know, but you don't really know the name and there's no Wi-Fi hotspot where you are. Well, what if you could just point your phone at it and look at the reviews and look at the menu without worrying about connectivity, without even knowing what the name of the restaurant is?
I see. And it would be up to the restaurant to broadcast, right? And obviously they have a vested interest. Now, all of this seems very, you know, hyper-local, which is amazing. If I'm a large brand, I'm a consumer product brand, or I'm an entertainment brand, how are the ways that, how might this technology be helpful to me in terms of creating activations, experience, and engagement?
Well, so that's a great question. And in fact, there's also an economic empowerment objective and or theme that's part of our connected city. We're talking to over 2,000 cities across the country, and they're thinking about how can they use our technology to promote local commerce. And some of these areas are more economically disadvantaged. But we want to make technology as accessible to as many people and businesses as possible. And so in some of the areas that we look to, you know, in fact, there are a lot of brands in these neighborhoods, like PepsiCo and General Mills and Kellogg's and Coca-Cola. And so what we could do is we could put a Boogie Box that's on the block or maybe even in the store. And these brands can make hyper-local offerings, hyper-local promotions. But instead of paying for a stack of cereal boxes to be displayed inside this little bodega, they can actually be paying us with a profit share to the bodega to help promote their merchandise inside the store. And because we are a citywide platform, we are now giving that bodega an opportunity to access a digital mobile platform without them ever having to worry about paying for an app.
Right. That's amazing. It's really incredible. So one other, we're chewing through our time kind of rapidly. It's crazy. So I wanted to circle back to the difference between Boogie Boxes and beacons, because I think that people are somewhat, I know a lot of people go to Disney and they have those wristbands. And so what is the difference between them?
Right. Well, you know, I think we could probably spend a couple of hours talking about the differences. So,
high level.
At a very basic level, a beacon is a one-way communication device. So it does talk to a smartphone using Bluetooth. But what it does is it sends a signal to the smartphone. Now, the beacon and depending on which version and manufacturer, it may require the user to have the app pre-downloaded. Okay, so let's say that it's a National Drugstore USA, and you have that app downloaded, and you're inside that drugstore, and you're walking around. Your phone receives a ping from that beacon, and your phone, because you have the app downloaded, will be able to interpret that ping. But all it is, it's a code, which then causes your phone now to then go to get on the internet and go to the server to then say, hey, Gabriella just received this ping. What does it mean? Oh, it means that she's at the store in Times Square. So send her this offer.
Okay.
What we do instead is we say, instead of making you go to the server, can we just send you that offer? And we don't really need to know where you are, but if you're within our listening distance of, say, 250 feet, it's relevant. And if you're too far away, we don't care.
Right. I see.
And then the other part that's interesting is, in our scenario, we don't care if you have an internet signal.
Ah, right. Which is pretty important.
So, I think it depends, right? So I think especially in the U.S., Wi-Fi is not ubiquitous. And sometimes even if you have Wi-Fi, it doesn't always perform. And some people, for security reasons, like me, I never log on to public Wi-Fi just for security. Mm-hmm. And I think when a store wants to offer, wants to support beacon type of functionality, they have to worry about how is the consumer going to have connectivity.
Mm.
And so we're trying to take that equation away. But more importantly, it now means that we have a solution which allows people to interact even if they don't have a cell phone. Because all you need is a smart device that has a Bluetooth connection.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And so we go into then the more economically disadvantaged neighborhoods And we want to give them an experience and give them something tactile and let them be able to get offers inside those bodegas. We don't have to worry about whether or not they have a cell phone contract.
Oh, very interesting. Right, right. So question though, you talked about you not going on to public networks because of security concerns. Is there a security concern with, how are things encrypted? How is that?
Well, it's about Wi-Fi in general. So in other words, if I'm not browsing through a secured like a VPN, or if I'm browsing unsecured websites, or if my mail program isn't secure, then, you know, there's always that risk, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of more of a general thing. I'm not going on record to say that all Wi-Fi is bad. It's just people need to be people just should be a little more aware than logging on Wi-Fi. I mean, I think what's also interesting is you have a lot of fraud people now who set up fake Wi-Fi to get you to log on as a way to steal your data. And then you're like clicking around trying to get, you know, trying to do what you do with this Wi-Fi. But in fact, it doesn't work because all that Wi-Fi is doing is to collect your information. And then so you give up and you say, oh, the Wi-Fi doesn't work. But in fact, you've just given away a lot of information.
Oh, that's so depressing, I have to say. That's depressing and scary. Yuck.
So
on that note, I'm never going to log on to public Wi-Fi again.
If you have a cell phone, I will say this. If you have a cell phone connection, it's almost always safer than using Wi-Fi, unless it's a private Wi-Fi with security and it's not open to the public and blah, blah, blah.
Note to self. Yes. Okay. So as I had said, we're actually at almost practically at the very, very end of our time. And so in wrapping it up, what are you most excited about in this, the start of 2018, where we are? What are you most excited about having happen this year? What's up next for you?
Oh, we're actually working on something, but I can't really say yet.
Okay, that's very tempting.
But it will be, I guess, let me give you a little preview, which is to say that we're looking at taking our connected city platform, but adding this additional layer of functionality that will really bring a synthesis of the digital and the physical worlds. When you think about your digital experience, it's mostly divorced from your physical location and your physical environment.
True.
Right? So because you can shop for Target.com wherever you are.
Right.
It doesn't matter where you are.
Right.
What we're looking at is how can we actually fuse the two to use digital to help you navigate the physical world in a way that you've never imagined before.
Ooh, that sounds pretty awesome. So, well,
yeah.
That's exciting. Well, I can't wait to hear more about it down the line. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. We've reached the end of another podcast.
No, thank you so much.
And a big thank you to our guest, Jack Chen.